KFI AM 640. Bill Handel here. It is a Wednesday morning, coming up at 9:30, Dean Sharp. And today we're going to be talking about contaminants. That's always fun. It's one of my favorite topics, contaminants. Think about it all the time. Yeah. Okay. Wayne's laughing because he knows it's true, for one thing. But let me tell you, or let me share with you, and we've talked about this one before too, not really diving into the topic, but acknowledging what's going on. And it's referred to as the Great Resignation. And we've had the Great Recession, of course, the Great Depression. And this one is very interesting. This is the Great Resignation, especially, and I don't think this has ever happened before. Matter of fact, it hasn't, where you have so many jobs available and at the same time, so many people quitting and not necessarily moving over to those jobs. Because if you look at the number of people that have resigned, look at the people who have resigned. Hospitality, retail, lower wage jobs. Although there are enough high-end jobs that we have to look at this. So desire to move on cuts across all industries, more so in the lower wage job. And what do you do when you switch job? Well, you're going to get a meaningful raise. You're theoretically going to get more rewarding work or improved work-life equilibrium. And we've been talking a lot about that because you have people that work at home who used to work in the office, and they want a hybrid model. They want a couple days in the office and maybe 3 days at home. And so that is work-life equilibrium. And I'm talking about experts who are dealing in this field. And the core of this story out of New York Times was advice from a woman, Gala Jackson, director of coaching and lead executive career coach at a financial management firm. And so this is pretty high-end stuff. And she deals with this issue on a daily basis over many, many clients throughout the year. And before you start, and here is the advice, before you start crafting that resignation letter, career coaches said, start asking some questions. What really is motivating you to leave? What do you really think it's going to take to thrive? And the first thing is better working conditions and more money. And while they're important, it's not even close to the real reason, because especially with the money part of it, you get the money and it's exciting. It's wonderful. I get more money, but then that disappears instantly. Within a couple of months, you spent more money or you've saved more money and that's not tangible. So the impact of more money is fairly minor when you talk about the impact of other aspects of work. What is the essence? What are you looking at to change? Well, one of the things is doing aligned work. In other words, work where you're working next to or with a workload that you're comfortable doing. And you know, so you walk in and there's not a particularly training area or a training time, which can be really stressful. Mission-focused work, not scut work. See if you can get more mission-focused work. You know, working at a McDonald's, for example, is, you know, for many people, it's boring work. But if you're working, I'm just speculating here, but working at a McDonald's and given a task like, let's see how we speed it up. Let's see what we can do to make it easier, better, more friendly to the customer. I mean, specific goals. That helps enormously as opposed to just do your job. And the biggest one is to feel honored and respected. That's the number one issue. If you feel like you are respected, if you feel that you are validated, that's the most important thing you can do. To feel invalidated, to feel like you're just a worker here, you're a worker bee, is horrific on morale. And people, well, they quit because of that. Also, look at what, success actually looks like. Is it success that other people determine when you're going to be successful? Or do you consider your own success and There is a difference, and yet that's conflated all the time. So this woman, Gala Jackson, says, you know, look at clients, and she tells clients, evaluate a bunch of areas at the same time. What do you do every day? What do you enjoy doing the most? And can you get a job that helps you go there? Look at the relationships between managers and your colleagues. That plays a very significant role in job satisfaction. When people say, I love my boss, we get along great, that keeps people in those jobs a lot longer. And then, are you engaged? Are you fulfilled? Does the work align with your values? If, for example, you really believe in public service, you should be working at a nonprofit. You should not be working for a large corporation, even if you have the skill level. So here you are, let's say you're a computer, let's say you're a geek, and you are a certified expert at programming or engineering or cyber work or cybersecurity, whatever it is. Well, working at a place that aligns with the Kumbaya, you know, songs that you sing every day is very important to a lot of people. Also, and now it's just practical stuff, you know, have another job lined up before you quit. And then the money part of it, and this, even though it's not as important, you have to really look at this. What are your monthly expenses, the non-negotiable ones, mortgage, rent, food, utilities, insurance, car payments, childcare, debts? What can you do without? Because you're looking, if you're quitting and you don't already have an emergency fund, man, there is definitely a time between, unless you go straight to a job. And then we go back to the other subject, get a job, have a job lined up. And a lot of people don't. And as always, save 3 to 6 months of expenses. And very few people can do that. And then you look at your retirement. Look at your retirement. And I mean study it. Because how many of us, you know, for example, how many of us know the difference between a Roth plan and a SEP plan, a 401k, a 403k, defined benefit plan? You look at this stuff. When you can take money out? Can you borrow against it? So there are lots and lots of things to look at. How about health insurance? If your company provides health insurance and all of a sudden you're working for a small company, a nonprofit, for example, that doesn't provide health insurance, wow, are you looking at a bill every month? As a matter of fact, you're probably looking, if you get more money, 3% more, 5% more. If you have a family of four and you're looking at decent insurance, you've just gotten a $1,000 a month haircut because you have to buy your own insurance. You have to look at all of that. And so the experts are saying, don't just jump up. Really, really look at this because these are truly life-changing experiences. And you got to do it right. Who's going to be the host of Jeopardy? Does anybody? What?
Me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a great gig. And there's a great story, a couple of great stories around it, as Alex Trebek was, of course, the consummate host, and his ratings were terrific. Here's the question. How much do you think Jeopardy has suffered without Alex Trebek? Zero.
What is zero?
It has not suffered at all. Matter of fact, it's done better.
No, I'm saying you have to answer it the Jeopardy way.
Oh, okay. What is zero? Our ratings. What are our ratings?
No.
We'll be back.
Got that wrong.
Yeah, KFI AM 640. Jennifer? Are we going to get sued for using that music? I think there's a limit. If you can, 15, 30 seconds, we're allowed to use that music under ASCAP or BMI. I think so. Anyway, for those of you who run Jeopardy, we probably ran over, so you enjoy the lawsuit. What's going on with Jeopardy? Who's going to be the host of Jeopardy? Ever since Alex Trebek died, it is a real question. And, you know, the people who run it, the network, is just sweating bullets. And it turns out that as they discussed it, it really doesn't matter. The show is on a hot streak. It's in its 38th season. A series of winning runs this season has produced three super champions with at least 10 victories in a row. I guess that's their super championship definition. You've got Amy Schneider, the current champ, reigning champ. She became the fourth person in the show's history to get more than $1 million in non-tournament play. She's the second player to join that club this season. Matt Amadio's 38-game streak ended in October, and she's number three in general right now. I mean, only surpassed by Amadio and the infamous player Ken Jennings, who has, after Alex Trebek, has become the face of Jeopardy. And now he really is. So they have a new producer, Michael Davies, who's a very interesting guy, 55 years old. He's known for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And after Mike Richard, who is a producer of the show, and then he turned host at the same time, and the network fired him, or the show fired him across the board because there were employment lawsuits in the past and then some misogynistic and anti-Semitic jokes he made on a podcast, and that doesn't work when you make anti-Semitic jokes, because here is what's going on. You know how Jews are always accused of running show business? Well, they do. And you can't make anti-Semitic jokes. By the way, that was a joke too, just to let you know. So what's going on? They have two hosts so far this season. Oh, let me go back to him for a moment. And what he is doing, he's updating Jeopardy. And he's taking a page from live sports broadcasts and the data. In other words, game stats. So at the bottom, you'll see stats that are crawling along. Like you see news, you know, watch CNN or Fox. They have the crawl at the bottom. And, you know, how many seconds does it take someone to ring the buzzer? How fast are they relative to what they were? How many questions have been asked in what category? You're actually seeing all these stats, and that makes the Super Jeopardy fans much more engaged, and it just makes it more interesting. I mean, I love it. When I watch football, don't you love those stats? This is the fourth time in NFL history that someone with a bad left knee was able to run 12 yards in this stadium. I mean, just this minutia. Well, he's going to bring that. And so that's one thing that makes a lot of sense. And then just choosing who is going to be the host. And the two this season, well, through the end of the season in July, are going to be Ken Jennings and Mayim Bialik. Mayim Bialik she was on The Big Bang. She played Sheldon's girlfriend. She is a real neuroscience. I mean, she has a PhD, so she's the real deal. And she played this brilliant girlfriend of Sheldon, except she really is brilliant. And she does those commercials for some supplement where she says, "Hi, I'm a real neuroscientist, so therefore so you should buy this useless stuff." And it's, boy, she's on another show, and I mean, she's become a big, big player in television. So those are the two that have been the face of Jeopardy. Oh, she's also on the Fox sitcom Call Me Cat. Don't know what's going to happen with that because she wants to do both. So now Jennings, when we're talking about the champions, you've got 34 wins with this particular winner, and that is this gal. Can I say gal? No, but she has 34. And then you have Amadio, which I think is 37. And then you have Ken Jennings with 70 straight wins. I don't think anybody's ever going to touch his record at all. And so the point is that no one is sweating bullets here. The show is doing better than it ever has. And they're just sitting back. 16 people have already hosted the show since Alex Trebek died. And thinking that no one could ever replace Alex Trebek, which is probably true. My guess is Ken Jennings is going to be the guy. He's calm. I mean, the guy's obviously brilliant. He knows the show in and out and can talk about his experience, which Trebek could not because he's on both sides of the game. Not only as host, but also as a player, having done it, well, over 70 games that he won. It's like, again, I'm going to make the analogy to football. And when you have the play-by-play, the people that do the color on football teams. Who do they have? Former players, right? Tony Romo, Troy Aikman. I mean, people who have played football, Hall of Famers usually. And then when they bring their analysis to the game, that's analysis. And I love it when they also bring up, hey, when I played, this is what I did under these circumstances. This is the play that was just called wrong by the coach. It makes no sense. Why? Because we did that when I was playing and it never worked. I mean, that's the kind of inside stuff that I love to hear and most people do. Well, you get the same thing with Ken Jennings, at least his knowledge. So don't worry about Jeopardy. Not a problem. They're doing just fine. And that's something that I thought would never happen. You probably never thought would happen, that when Alex Trebek died, the show was going to be, to some extent, dying with him. Nope. Coming up, Handel and the House Whisper with Dean Sharp. And today's segment is all about contaminants. One of my favorite subjects in the world. I love contamination of anything. We'll be back with that. This is KFI AM 640. Let's check in with Jennifer. Oh, home, let me come home. And good morning, Bill Handel. Our last couple of segments of the show, Wednesday, and we traditionally always have Dean Sharp with us, House Whisper. And his show is heard Saturdays, 6 to 8 a.m., Sundays, 9 to 11 a.m., and it's At Home with Dean is his social media address. And today, well, first of all, good morning, Dean.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So today we're going to talk about contaminants, and there are two that I want to particularly focus on. One is mold. Which that's a big problem. That I think is absolutely real. The other one is radon.
Yeah.
And that is, I've always looked at radon much as if you live within a quarter of a mile of one of those electrical poles, those electrical transmission lines, you are going to have children with two heads.
And yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right in this sense. Not that radon is a hoax. It's not. But there are a lot of people who know nothing about it. And there are, of those who have heard something about it, a lot of them think it's just BS. What the hell? What is this radon? What is radon anyway? And why is it yet on another list of things that's invading my home?
Okay, so let's talk about radon. The efficacy of ways to deal with it, you know, anti-radon devices, and what it really means, and how much radon does it take to really get ill, and you know, how many kids are you going to have with two heads if you live in a house that has a substantial amount of radon.
Okay, so here is the thing. We're going to dispel the myths, and we're just going to talk turkey about radon. Radon is a real thing. Radon is a radioactive gas. It comes from the natural decay of uranium. And uranium, by the way, is found in various levels in nearly every soil type throughout North America. So, and it is constantly decaying. And of course, uranium deposits are richer in some areas and not in others, depending on all sorts of geological reasons, everything from types of stone that it embeds in to the shape of your surrounding area. So radon is a real thing. It's a radioactive gas, okay? And as a radioactive gas, there's nothing really radioactive having to do with uranium on this planet that is safe. So let me just clearly say that. It's a real thing, and there is a danger to it. In fact, here is the thing. The EPA warns that long-term exposure to high levels of radon can cause lung cancer. And this isn't just an ephemeral warning. Radon poisoning is the second leading cause of lung cancer, right behind smoking, in America. And it accounts for about 21,000 deaths per year.
Yeah, now, let me ask this, because we're talking about excessive levels of radon, and they're able to trace down, I guess it's contact tracing or form of it. Someone dies, obviously they investigate the home or their workplace where they live, and there's tons of radon. out there. Now, how many people of those have underlying some condition that are already susceptible to lung cancer? I mean, these are weird studies because I have heard from people that it is real and can be very dangerous. Conspiracy nuts like you. And at the same time, no, I had to pull your leg on that one. And I'm also looking, this one is a little troubling, is part of what you showed me was an EPA radon zone map. And in California, it looks like the only zone one, the most dangerous zone, is right here where we live and work.
Yeah, so the map that I showed you, and if anybody pulls this up, you just Google either a national or a California radon map, EPA radon map. You're going to find that all of L.A. and most of Orange County are in zone two, which is negligibly high or moderate radon zones. Those two red zones that you see are where I live, Ventura and Santa Barbara County. That's okay. Ventura and Santa Barbara County are in the red zone. Now, this has got to be very, very importantly said. The maps that you see, these are averages. They're averages, okay? That means the average throughout a region gets a medium or a high or a low score. That does not mean that your individual home is on the average or below average, because radon can spike and be present anywhere at any time, okay?
And, so how do you know? And, how do you figure
okay,
it out?
Okay, so here's how you know. Here's how you know. First of all, the easy way to figure out what's going on with your home and radon is to simply get a radon test. Radon is colorless. It is odorless. You can't see it. You can't feel it. but it would be there anyway. A radon test kit is anywhere from $15 to $30.
Oh, so that's
you follow
easy.
The instructions. You set it up in a room. You wait a couple of days or sometimes up to a week. You close it up, put it in an envelope, drop it off to the lab. And within a couple of days, you're going to get your lab results back at what level radon is in your house. Second thing, radon is like smoking when it comes to lung cancer. Nobody just walks into a high radon area and walks out with lung cancer. It is daily exposure to relatively high levels. And of course, there's biological sensitivities as well. But here's where they have narrowed down that the testing, Bill. If they find somebody with lung cancer without tar in their lungs from smoking, that's when they go to the secondary test to see, okay, this came from something radioactive as opposed to from smoking. So, you know, this is how they know the deaths that are occurring from radon.
Okay, so
it's a real thing, and it can happen in your home. That's
all right,
the point.
So assuming that you have high levels, you've done the test, you spent the $30, and you find out there are levels that are high enough to be concerned about, mitigation, what do you do?
Yeah, and this is the good news. Mitigation is actually pretty easy because here's the point with radon. It's in the soil. It's oozing out of the soil. And normally, I mean, it's all around us. We're all experiencing radon every day, but in very low levels outside because the wind blows it away and carries it away and so on. The problem with houses are you basically put a little dome cap over the top of radon and it builds up inside the house. So what do we do? What we want to do is we want to bleed the radon off from underneath your house, whether you have a crawl space or a slab. And it's actually relatively easy and inexpensive. Now, I say that an entire radon mitigation for most homes, the average cost about $1,400.
Yeah, that's money. That's money.
Yeah, it's money, okay? But there are so many other things that can go wrong with a house that are so much more expensive. And this is only if you have high levels of radon in your home. And it amounts to basically drilling a hole through your slab, placing a pipe down in through that hole so that that pipe can receive the gases that are forming in the soils under your house. And then that pipe gets, routed outside your house. Now, sometimes there are passive systems, what we call passive, which is just the pipe and vented outside your house. For more serious situations, we have an active system in which that pipe also has an inline fan on it that actually acts like a 24/7, vacuum system, vacuuming up the radon. And that is it. And by the way, it's a serious enough issue now that in new builds, we are now a brand new build, brand new house. We're putting in passive radon systems underneath the slab of every new home that we build now. We don't even worry about it. We don't even think about it because it's literally a couple $300 to add this to the build of your house.
All right, let's take a last break of the show. We're going to come back and talk about mold. I know is very for real, and because I get asked this all the time. I have lawyers, friends who actually specialize in mold litigation, and there's lawsuit after lawsuit and what happens. And we'll talk about that when we come back, how you deal with mold. In the meantime, this is KFI, and let's check in with Jennifer Jones Lee.
Home is wherever we are, if there's love here too. Back of my house.
AM 640, Bill Handel here. Good morning as we finish our show on a Wednesday, January 19th. And let's go right back to Dean Sharp, our house whisperer. And we're talking about contaminants and radon we talked about. And that I'm a little about it. It's like,
Don't go there.
No. Well, I'm going to make the analogy.
Not an expert, Bill.
Of course I am.
Just leave it be.
On radio. All right, let's just move right into an issue that I think we both agree on. And I'm up to my eyeballs in it, not only with questions on Handle on the Law, but lawyers I know who specialize in this kind of litigation. And that is mold.
Oh, yeah.
Mold is very real. And there are a lot of offshoots of this problem.
There are. And although I got to say, if you were to balance the difference between mold and radon out there as far as hype and scammers, mold takes the cake. I mean, absolutely 100% takes the cake because people know so very little about it. And with all the media hype around it, everybody is scared to death of mold. And not to say that mold doesn't have its issues. It does. It's a serious issue. But it is not the creeping, invisible enemy that it is often made out to be.
Yeah, like bad science fiction films of the 50s. It just sort of crawls out.
Exactly.
So it's here in Southern California, and this is what I want to talk about for a moment, mold needs humidity.
Yes.
It doesn't live in dry. And our humidity level is about 50%, which is why Southern California weather is so spectacular. Who keeps a house humid?
Well, some people do. Sometimes, you've got folks who spend way too much time inside, folks who don't open up the doors and windows. So a lot of people run humidifiers in their home because they think they just need more humid air and more humid is better in general. That's what they believe. And as a result, there you go. Also, an area, and this is something that not a lot of folks think about. If you don't heat your house sufficiently, like if your house is always cold and super cold, actually, then you get lots of condensation. You end up with higher levels of humidity that way. And as a result, you get mold growth. So you're right. You are absolutely right. We live in one of the lowest mold threat environments in the country because 50% humidity is not optimal. Mold does not want to grow at 50% humidity. It wants 60% or more. It wants to stay out of the sunlight, and it wants to stay in places that you don't reach and that you don't clean.
All right,
it's a fungus.
Yeah, I love that fungus among us here. Real quickly, we only have a couple of minutes. Dealing with mold, both prophylactically and dealing with mold when it's there.
Right. Okay. So dealing with mold. Number one, it is not hard to kill mold. It isn't. People ask me all the time, what kills mold? Bleach, vinegar, baking soda, hydrogen peroxide, rubbing alcohol, daylight. And then, of course, there's a whole slew of specialized fungicides that you can buy out there. All kill mold. So when people say, how do I avoid a mold problem in my house, Dean? I'm like, clean your house. Mold does not survive regular cleaning with regular disinfectants. It really doesn't. If you have an infestation, in other words, you've had leaks, you've had water damage, maybe you've had a leak down inside a wall that you didn't even know about. Now we've got mold growing in the cavity of a wall or underneath a floor space. That's when we need some kind of remediation. We got to open that stuff up. You got to call mold experts out. And really, mold remediation is not about killing the mold. It's about opening up the house and getting to all the areas where it has grown to. It's not about the difficulty of killing mold.
What are you going to talk about this weekend?
All right. Well, Sunday show, all about contaminants. We're going to deep dive on radon, mold, lead, and asbestos. And Saturday morning, we're going to talk about basic framing. What are you going to find when you open up your wall?
All right. All of it. Sounds good. And I think one of the suggestions you're going to make is don't eat lead hors d'oeuvres. Or hors d'oeuvres made out of lead. Yes.
Wait, I'm going to write that note down right now.
Yeah, please do. Right. So, Dean, it's coming up Saturday, 6 to 8 a.m., and Sundays, 9 a.m. to 11. Dean is on right after me, Handle on the Law, from or I'm on right after Dean, 11 to or 8 to 11 a.m. Yeah, I always get the times screwed up on our weekends. Dean Sharp, At Home with Dean is his social. Dean, you have a good one. We'll catch you this weekend.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Take care. And up next, Gary and Shannon are here right up until John and Ken at 2 o'clock. Handle in the Morning Crew. We start again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Jennifer with Wake Up Call from 5 to 6. I'm here from 6 to 10 with the rest of the crew. This is KFI AM 640, live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.